5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
If you're a DC fan, you'll definitely want to check out the latest live-action series, Titans, available now on DC Universe. This series premiered on October 12th, and new episodes are available to stream every Friday. Titans is the first original series to launch on DC Universe, and it follows a group of young, soon-to-be superheroes. Like Robin, Batman's former sidekick, now trying to break free of his Robin alter ego. Raven, a guarded teenager who's starting to experience the emergence of supernatural power she just doesn't understand. Starfire, a mysterious alien warrior with exceptional powers, but her memory loss is preventing her from knowing her own identity and her mission on Earth. This group gets caught up in conspiracy to bring about hell on Earth, and they become a surrogate family and team of heroes. This is a gritty take on the Teen Titans franchise from executive producers Akiva Goldsman, Jeff Johns, Greg Berlanti, Greg Walker, Sarah Schechter, and John Fawcett. Titans explores one of the most popular comic book teams ever, and it's only available on DC Universe on all your favorite devices. DC Universe is only $7.99 a month or 20% off for a yearly membership. Join the ultimate DC membership at DCUniverse.com and check out Titans.
This week on Retronauts, Suku Suku Yabo Yabo. Hey everybody, it's Bob Mackey, your host for this episode of Retronauts. Today's topic is Luigi's Mansion. Before I begin, who else is here with me?
I'm shaking every lamp in this room, but I can't find the diamonds. It's Henry Gilbert.
What, you don't keep all of your money in your lamps like a normal person? Yes, we're here in the Retronauts Berkeley studio, high above the war-torn streets of Berkeley, where there's constant gang violence and Antifa versus Fa. It's always happening here in Berkeley.
So dangerous.
Yeah, watch the news, people. It's all real. But we're here to talk about Luigi's Mansion because there is a new 3DS version of it that is basically, it's hard to call it this without it sounding insulting, but it's just a port. But
yeah,
it's a way to play Luigi's Mansion again.
It's really, I honestly expected a little bit more from it than what is in this package. It's,
yes.
It's not a bad package and looks good, but boy, when I was playing, I was like, no, this really is just the first game I played back in 01.
I mean, you're forgetting Gooigi.
Oh, that's true.
Never speak his name again. He's cursed. Yes, so there is a new 3DS version of Luigi's Mansion. I played it. It's great. It's a great port. But again, it is just that first game. So that's what you're getting. But I want to talk about the first game because it is very good. And I feel like only in recent years has it been redeemed in the eyes of gamers all around the world.
Yeah, not unlike its other GameCube brethren, like Wind Waker and Mario Sunshine, except that Mario Sunshine is bad.
Yes, we've proven that, like, through science, that it's a bad game.
But those had bad reputations, and yeah. I think I have some theories as to why, too, that I might get to a little later on this podcast, but I think I'm hoping that this and the previous Luigi's Mansion game that came out maybe showed Nintendo that there are fans for it, and there's reason to enjoy this game.
Yeah, they've really embraced it. So this game came out in 2001, so it's now 17 years old.
Ugh.
It'll be 17 very, very soon as of this recording. So it
can vote.
Half a lifetime ago for me. More than half. No, actually, less than half. I'm very old, people, is what I'm saying. It came out in 2001. It was a GameCube launch game for both the Japanese GameCube and the American GameCube. And since then, it took 12 years, but there was eventually a sequel for the 3DS. There is an arcade game version, which I've never played, but I really want to. And the 3DS port of the original just came out. Mm-hmm. And now, in 2019, there will be a Switch game. All we've seen is a logo. Who knows if it will even be showing up in 2019, but hey, it's going to be, it's something that they have kind of quote-unquote promised us.
Feels more like an early 2020 type game. Luigi is not your anchor for a fall release.
That's right. Certainly not your anchor for a system launch.
And if Luigi's Mansion 3, I doubt will be the final title. So if it was coming out in this next 6 months, then they'd have a final title for it. So
yeah,
my bet is first quarter 2020.
That's a safe bet. And I think it's just like that new Metroid game where all we have is a logo, but still more than a year later. Yeah, there's
You had a little bit more than a logo. You had Luigi opening a door.
Okay.
And so there. That is more than you got from Prime 4.
That counts as a game. But before we get started into, you know, who made the game, what it's like, what we think about it, Henry, what is your experience with this game released in 2001?
Longtime listeners might know that I'm a huge Nintendo fanboy. The height of my Nintendo fandom and also like toxic fandom was being a defensive GameCube owner. And I was that even before the GameCube came out. I wasn't an N64 player. It was my primary home console. Plus, I was playing the Game Boy games a ton. And so the GameCube was coming out. I was like, well, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. I don't need a PS2, even though I can't buy it anyway. This Xbox thing sounds stupid.
Made by Americans.
It can't be good. Made by micro dollar sign oft. I think I've made that joke before. But anyway.
We've all made it.
I was super excited for the GameCube release. I was following every bit of news about this game and all the other games, and I got my GameCube on launch day, and I have to say, though, the reviews beforehand made me not buy it. My launch day games, which I had to buy in a bundle from Sam Goody, was the Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3, Rogue Squadron, and it was Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 and Rogue Squadron. Okay. Those were the two I had to get. And I did, though, rent Luigi's Mansion for free because Blockbuster that weekend was doing a deal like, if you come in with a receipt of purchasing a GameCube, you can rent a GameCube game for free.
Oh, yeah. They were cozy with Nintendo back then before they died.
And so I rented it for free and beat it in a weekend. And I was like, boy, this is great. But I'm also glad I didn't spend $50 on this.
I did spend $50 on it. And I was working at a GameStop. There we go. But it was a software etc. at the time. And I did not have the greatest, nicest managers. In fact, they were really anti everything but Xbox. It was odd. And they were bad managers, too. So my one manager called I think they both called the PlayStation 2, get this, the PS Poo.
Oh.
It's going to blow your mind. Guess what the GameCube was?
Gay Cube.
It was the Gay Cube.
Okay, yeah.
And
I figured homophobia was in there somewhere.
They like saying that a lot, especially in front of customers. I'm sure they offended no gay people that walked in our store because they just simply didn't exist in Ohio. But I bought the GameCube. I had a PS2 already, but I couldn't not buy a Nintendo system. I skipped the N64 and I thought I made the wise decision, but the GameCube looked much better and they seemed to be making up for a lot of the mistakes of the N64. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't not buy a Mario style game with a new Nintendo system. I think we were very spoiled at that point in time because every Nintendo system launched with a Mario game, often in the box. The N64 didn't. That was the first. But there would always be a Mario game with the system at launch.
So that was kind of, I think, the problem for... I think that's another reason why I was less ready to buy Luigi's Mansion at launch was because I bought my NES with the Super Mario Brothers, though hardly in launch. Super NES sold me with Super Mario World. And N64... they clearly hurt the rest of their lineup by focusing on just Super Mario 64 as their main game. So not getting a real Mario game at launch felt wrong to me. And I felt screwed over by Nintendo. And here they are handing me this Luigi game. And it just felt so... Oh, and then to hear that made the shortness of it actually sting a bit more because I was used to like... well, my first 2 weeks with the Nintendo system is doing every single thing I can in a Super Mario game. I can't do that this time. And it just felt wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bought it with my purple GameCube. Mm-hmm. Was Spice out at the time? Could you get a Spice GameCube?
Not in America. Okay, it was just purple. You get a Spice controller, but only purple in America.
I'm sure my bosses made fun of me for that. And I bought Luigi's Mansion. I was made fun of for that. But I brought it home and I played through it in a weekend. And I really enjoyed it. But yes, it was very short. And this was at a time when games were getting much, much longer. And there was an expectation attached to most $50 games in that it would last you a long time. There might be multiple endings, but this was kind of absurdly short for a full retail release game in 2001. It is really only 4 to 5 hours long. If you get all of the extra stuff, it's a 5-hour game. I can see you getting through this game in like 3 hours, just like an afternoon. You can kind of cruise through it. That's not bad, but our expectations were much different, and that is reflected in the reviews of the time. Also, the expectation of this Nintendo system better launch with one of the best games on the platform, like all the other ones did, or else we're going to be upset.
Yeah, I guess as an adult now, I definitely have a different way of thinking than when I was 19 and got a GameCube, because then I did think like hours spent times quality is how you get a score of a game. You know, it wasn't a 10 is a game that lasted a much longer time. And I think now even I just have the opposite feeling. I will make an exception for, say, a Dragon Quest. But like when I hear that Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is seemingly, you know, it's a good game. I enjoyed other Assassin's Creed games. I like it. But when I hear it's like 60, 70 hours long, I'm like, no, nah, don't want it. Same with Red Dead 2. I'm just like, boy,
that's a lot.
Too much. Yeah. Too much.
And it sucks for me because all the games I want to play next that I already own, they're all 100-hour games, like Yakuza 6 and Persona 5. I've got a huge stack of 100-hour games waiting for me. But Luigi's Mansion is very brief. And I kind of like that now. I was able to finish this game in a few days. I was like, wow, that was just very satisfying. It didn't last too long. But in 2001, the response was, how dare you, sir? How dare you make a 4-hour game for me?
Oh, I remember my other packet. The other launch day game I got was Super Monkey Ball. And it made me feel weird that I was playing a Sega game way more on launch day than I was playing a Nintendo game.
It was an odd time. And soon Sonic would be on the GameCube and all the rules would be changed and it'd be chaos in the streets.
Chaos and Sonic, eh?
No, I didn't mean that, and I hate myself. So now let's talk about Luigi's Mansion and the origins of this game. So there's lots of great material about this game because a lot of it had been shown off before the official release. So this concept was originally created for the first GameCube trailer for Space World 2000. You might have heard this come up on the Wind Waker episode. That was the infamous trailer for what people assume would be the next Legend of Zelda game, where it was a quote-unquote realistic-looking Link that looks like total ass now, fighting a Ganon that looks like total ass now. But it was the most realistic Ganon and Link we'd seen up to that point, and we assumed that's what the new Zelda would look like.
Nintendo thought it was just a cool thing to show off. They did not understand that most, at least in Western fans' eyes, that was making a promise to them of the game they were going to get.
Yes. And other things that were tech demos from that reel did not make it out. So that is known unofficially as Zelda 128. Mm-hmm. And Super Mario 128 would also not make it out, but that would become Pikmin.
Yes. And there is also Pokemon Guitar Party, where Meowth is playing a guitar surrounded by a bunch of Pokemon.
I think that made it into something like Pokemon Channel
Pokemon
or something.
Pokemon Channel, but that wasn't even released in America.
Right.
It's the Pokemon Channel was basically just like a place to dump Pokemon from your GameCube, say, via the good old connectivity.
Oh, gosh. But yes, this trailer, I don't know how many times I've seen it. Maybe my mind was just more elastic back then, but I can just see all these images, especially that Meowth music party.
Yeah, no.
I can just imagine it in my head, like it's happening in front of me.
I watched it on loop a million times. Well, also, even watching, I feel like an old man saying this, but watching a video clip on my computer in 2000 of an upcoming video game, that alone had some novelty to it still.
I was an IGN insider back then, mostly for the GameCube stuff, and a lot of the videos were just people filming a screen at a convention. Mm-hmm. So you see the reflections, you see people's heads. It was a very different time. You didn't get the HD video sent directly to your outlet that you would just post online. You had to capture from another TV at a venue.
And the Luigi footage in that looks so great. Even he's more expressive than they kind of, you see how much they kind of toned it down from that tech demo. Like Luigi is all over the place in expressions. Like his head changes shape so many times. He even has this like weird death stare at one point in it.
Yeah, I think maybe they toned things down because there had to be more things moving on the screen, or maybe their tech demo hardware was more advanced than the final product. But you're right, they did tone it down a lot. Let's talk about some behind the scenes things from Luigi's Mansion. So I found a 2001 interview, which which means it's poorly translated, from this site called, I believe, Insider. It's I don't know if it's still around, but it was one of the archive interviews I could find. And it was weird because you didn't see a lot of interviews with Nintendo people back then, especially just, you know, non-Miyamoto, non-Iwata Nintendo people.
It really didn't happen in 01. I think that might show you how desperate for coverage they were of Luigi, as everybody else was talking about Grand Theft Auto or Halo in November of 2001.
This game, I believe, so there's a lot of speculation about certain things about it that are hinted at in this interview. So we can kind of put the pieces together. I think it was originally an N64 game idea, but, you know, they had to cut their losses and move on to the next platform. So I don't really blame them for not making an N64 game.
No.
But this original idea came about with the idea of the game would involve exploring a house or an apartment complex, just like exploring an indoor space. And Mario characters weren't always involved in this game concept, but I guess they eventually thought, you know, we could sell this idea with Mario characters, and this universe is fun to play around in.
I think conceptually in Nintendo, when you're pitching something, at some point they must say, like, all right, if this wasn't a Mario game, you were pitching it already, could this be a Mario game? Let's figure this out.
What if Luigi was there? So, yes, they were leaning more towards a ninja mansion or a Japanese-style house originally, mm-hmm. but then they decided to go with a more European-style mansion, and that is what is in the final game. And the designers always had the idea for a three-story house in mind with a basement, but the original idea also included an underground cave to explore. So the original design was a little more ambitious, obviously. That and some other things were scaled back to get it out in time for a release
in
the console.
In the second Luigi's Mansion, they'd finally get that cave. They would do a cave stage in that game.
I'm excited. I just started that game, and I'm having a lot of fun with
it.
Yeah, I bought it a few years ago. Now, it's so good. So another scrapped idea is that the stages would change after certain actions. And I think this was tied into a quote-unquote real-time clock. Not a real-time clock, but a clock that would advance.
Yeah.
Sort of like Majora's Mask or any game you play with a clock in it outside of Animal Crossing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see the clock on the Game Boy Horror in some of the early footage of the game. So I could see, though, it always has to be night at Luigi's Mansion. So you wonder, like, well, how much can this clock change storytelling-wise?
Well, they could alter the reality where it's like, well, if the booze can make a mansion, they can also create, like, a time bubble where time can pass, but it's always night or the sun doesn't come up or something. Like that.
That's true. Not a hard plot thing to get around. Luigi's Mansion isn't really known for its like dense, hyper-realistic plot.
Well, there are major contradictions in the story, and I hope to cover them in this episode because they really confuse me. But yes, so the director originally wanted this to be a game you could play repeatedly, and I think that had something to do with the clock that they eventually took out of the game, and that you had to do certain things in certain times, or you had to return to certain places at certain times, sort of like the Majora's Mask idea, where there's always something happening even if you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool, and I hope they do that with the third game, maybe, but that's something they took out of the game. And if you look at old video of the game and old magazine articles for the game, you can see the Game Boy Color. The Game Boy Horror had other uses, too. And in some early Nintendo Power pictures, the Game Boy Horror was also a camera. So there'd be like a little picture-in-picture in the TV screen. So Luigi's always holding the Game Boy Horror upright in front of him. So you would see a picture-in-picture image of what Luigi was seeing in front of him in the game.
That's a neat idea, but that's also a lot. It's even more rendering stuff you're putting on this first-generation GameCube game.
And I mean, it's pointless. It's just sort of showing
off. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of pointless showing off in this game for the hardware's sake.
That's what I love about it. That's some of my favorite stuff in the game is how much it is showing off what your new machine can do. Look at all these brand new tricks.
And I recommend you guys go out, and I'll link to it in the blog post for this episode. Find the Beta 64 video for Luigi's Mansion. Beta 64 looks at the older unreleased versions of games to see how they differ from the final version. And there are some major changes in the early version. I think it was going to be even more horror focused, where Luigi would not always have his lights. Luigi could get scared into submission and have to like sort of scoot away on his butt until he regains his composure. Ghosts that are invisible and kind of pop out and scare you and can put Luigi in that state. I think there was a lot more of the like literal horror stuff, things that could actually scare you conceivably, even though this game can be pretty intense for kids. Like I was playing this again and I could see how this could be too scary for a kid to play through.
Yeah, and that backwards butt scoot is such a cool animation, but I also think like they definitely didn't want to get too intense for the intended audience of children for this. Yeah, and same with the ghosts give you a little bit of time to go like, oh, I now I'm scared. And still like, ah, like these are not the force you to look at something and then scream in your face of VR scares these days.
It's a much lesser degree of jump scare than the ones we're used to today. I think, I don't know, modern kids are so desensitized to Five Nights at Freddy's. This could just be nothing to them.
This is nothing. Like how Bart talked about, you know, the original Friday the 13th is kind of nothing to kids now.
That's true.
That's how these kids are today for us.
So what am I saying? Kids can handle this game today. I looked at GameSpot and IGN, and they still have articles up for this LA event in May of 2001 where...
That's pretty cool.
Miyamoto was there. Iwata was there. Of course, the pictures are very tiny because of, you know, they're from 2001, but you can see them showing it off. Miyamoto being very playful, and there's some stuff in this version of Luigi's Mansion that is not in the final version that some of the writers pointed out. Of course, they didn't know it wouldn't be in the final version. One of the quote-unquote features is that if you use the vacuum too much at once, it will overheat and Luigi's butt will catch on fire. You'll have to scoot around to put out the fire, which I'm glad they didn't put that in the final game. It seems like an unnecessary restriction on vacuuming.
Yeah, I can see the gameplay bonus they had to that. It just like this makes it more challenging. You have to be careful not to overdo it. You can't just be sucking all the time. but oppositely, I could also see that perhaps they saw balance-wise, it just makes this less fun for no real reward.
Yeah, the fun of the game is sucking, to put it lightly.
As somebody who wrote previews for the second Luigi's Mansion
this game's
game,
gonna suck.
And reviews for it, it was so hard to not just... I was like, how else do I say suck or sucking or blowing? Like,
there are no good adjectives for, or sorry, synonyms for those.
Yeah,
you just, I was kind of embarrassed putting them in my notes. Like when Luigi sucks this, what am I even saying here? So this game, and I think the GameCube in general, was designed for stereoscopic 3D. And Nintendo rightly assumed that most consumers could not afford compatible displays that would display stereoscopic 3D images. I'm not sure if they had a proprietary monitor in mind to sell or if things are just more advanced in Japan and I can't do the right research on them. But from my research, 3D compatible displays were not put into mass consumer hands until 2010. So maybe they were seeing into the future that didn't exist. Like, oh, of course, by 2002, maybe there'll be 3D TVs and people would play this on it. Who knows?
You know, maybe in 99, 2000, their partners at Panasonic were overstating to them, like, no, 3D TVs, they're the future and they're coming real soon. Maybe that's it. Or that they thought they could sell a thing. But either way, I mean, Nintendo, every console, they're like, we could also sell a piece of plastic to go with this console. And it never sells that much. And they barely, like, it's so weird to see Nintendo make the same mistake every 5 years with physical add-ons.
And of course, 3D TVs would take over. We all have one. And they're just commonplace. No, I'm lying. I forgot that they were even real. They were a brief fad from like 2010 to 2012.
Yeah,
and
I guess you could still buy one now.
I look, they're still on sale, but I think nothing, they don't really make 3D programming anymore.
Okay. I mean, 3D movies really only exist so you can charge $4 more for a movie ticket. They don't do much.
I'm so mad at 3D movies still. I never buy the 3D ticket.
Yeah, it feels wrong every time. The only times I've done it is when... I simply must see the new Marvel movie, Bob, and all the 2D showings are sold out. Then I must settle for 3D, but pretty rarely.
It never works right. It never works right. So let's talk about a few of the people behind this game. And the director is Hideki Kono. If you don't know who he is, I will tell you a little bit about him. But go back to our Mario Kart episode, because we talk a lot about who he is and what he did, because he is sort of the Mario Kart guy. So he started at Nintendo. He was assistant director of Doki Doki Panic, of course, which is Super Mario Brothers 2 USA. Yes, I gave you that trivia. You need to hear it. And he worked on every core 2D Mario game after that. So he worked on the big boys. He was one of the directors of Yoshi's Island as well. So an esteemed Nintendo guy, for sure.
Now, the core dudes on Yoshi's Island are... There's a reason it's one of the best games ever made, and it's the core team of the best Nintendo guys, headed by Takeshi Tezuka, but also Hideki Kano and Eguchi as well of Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
They're all there working real hard on it.
It's whoever wasn't killing themselves on Mario 64.
Yes.
They were working on it. They were killing themselves on Yoshi's Island. So
Working to Death was involved in some way.
Yes, it had to be. So he didn't direct Mario Kart Double Dash because he was working on this game. But after that, he was basically just on Mario Kart constantly.
That must be why Double Dash is so different from the rest, I think, then. Maybe his Kano's lesser involvement in it. I know there's you either love Double Dash or you hate Double Dash if you're a Mario Kart fan.
I used to love it until Mario Kart 8. Now it's my favorite.
Mario Kart 8's the perfect one. It really is. It doesn't... I deal with the technical drive of being of the swapping between partners and just that kind of depth to it.
And the grinding for sparks and everything too is fun. So the general soundscape and music is by a very notable Nintendo guy, Kazumi Totaka. And you might know him as KK Slider in Animal Crossing. He is the basis for KK Slider. His eyebrows look normal to me, but maybe he trimmed them over time. Who knows?
He seems like a real fun kind of weirdo guy who just makes odd sound design and some music for Nintendo. Koji Kondo is the famous guy, and I would say below him is Hip Tanaka, but Totaka is moving on up in the world, mostly thanks to the trivia involving him.
That's right. So if I name some of the games he's worked on, you will get a sense for what his music is like, especially if you've just played Luigi's Mansion like me. Mario Paint, Yoshi's Story, and Animal Crossing are...
Yay.
They all sound... I mean, Yoshi's Story is an all right game, but it has a very weird music,
really
weird sounds,
does.
a lot of rap influence. Luigi's Mansion has a lot of rap influence, a lot of jazz influence, things like that. And this soundtrack is so good, and we'll get into how the music is integrated into the game, but I love his music, and I love that he gets a chance to make weird music like this in these games, like non-traditional video game music. And other things he's worked on, I really love his Super Mario Land 2 OST, and it is just a traditional Mario soundtrack, but it's very, very catchy.
With just a little extra weirdness to it,
yeah,
I would say.
That's true, like a little touch of his weirdness. I think he couldn't get away with as much with the Game Boy, and then that sound on the Game Boy.
I mean, I love Land 2 because it is R&D1 pretending to do an EAD game, and they kind of, I think, are having a little fun playing around in Miyamoto's sandbox, I think.
It's a world where Mario sucks, and he builds a statue tribute to himself, and Mario is the true champion of the people, which is why he started in those games after that. So, of course, if you're a Nintendo fan, you know Totaka's song. It's a 19-note song that shows up in almost all the games he's worked on, except for maybe... God, I want to say maybe X, the Game Boy game, but I'm not completely sure about that. But it does show up in Luigi's Mansion. And actually, I accessed it on accident. I was leaving my Game Boy on. I still call my 3DS the Game Boy, so sue me. I was leaving my Game Boy on while I was typing on the internet, and it was the training mode, the preface to the training mode where it shows you the controls. And I was just typing away, and the music gets all weird and interrupted. I'm like, oh, this is where the Totaka song starts. And yes, it's in the game. So
I'm glad it's in the re-release, too.
Yes, they kept it in the re-release, thank God. And I will play a little bit of it here. And yes, it shows up in all the games he's worked on. I think the easiest one to find it in is in Mario Paint. It's when you click on one of the letters in Mario Paint on the title screen. It will just play the song. So there you have it. But usually you can hear Totaka's song if you wait long enough in certain games. That's usually how you quote-unquote unlock it. But it is just a goofy little 19-note ditty that is his signature song that he puts in all of his games.
DC fans, you're going to want to check out the latest live-action series, Titans, available now on DC Universe. The series premiered on October 12th, and new episodes are available to stream every single Friday. It's the first original series to launch on DC Universe and follows a group of young, soon-to-be superheroes. There's Batman's former sidekick, Dick Grayson, also known as Robin, Raven, a guarded teenager who's starting to experience the emergence of supernatural powers that she doesn't yet understand. There's also Starfire and Beast Boy. These four characters become a surrogate family and team of heroes as they're caught up in a conspiracy to bring about hell on Earth. It's a gritty take on the Teen Titans franchise, from executive producer Akiva Goldsman, Jeff Johns, Greg Berlanti, Greg Walker, Sarah Schechter, and John Fawcett. It's a fresh new take on one of the most popular comic book teams ever, and it's available only on DC Universe. You can watch it on all your favorite devices for only $7.99 a month. That's 20% off a yearly membership. So join the ultimate DC membership at DCUniverse.com and keep up with the Titans. Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 channels and thousands of movies on demand all for free. No credit card needed. No sign up. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all your favorite devices today.
If you're excited for Halloween, you're going to love all the thrilling shows Podcast One has to offer. Get ready for chills with some of the best crime and mystery shows around, like Beyond the Darkness, Serial Killer Podcast, Cold Case Files, Murder Made Me Famous, The First Degree, and so much more. Check out all these thrilling shows today on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Life is full of those moments.
Like right after that first stretch and yawn in the morning.
Yeah. Or like standing in the forest alone amid the stillness. The beauty hits you like the crisp air and suddenly everything makes sense and you're one with the earth and stars. Or like dollar drinks at McDonald's.
Keep those moments going with $1 any size McCafe brewed coffee and $1 any size soft drinks on the $1, $2, $3 menu. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with combo meal.
So let's talk about Luigi's Mansion, the game itself. It was released on September 14th, 2001 in Japan, and November 18th, 2001 in the U.S. And these are both GameCube launch days in their respective territories. So big launch game.
Happier time to talk about the November release date. Yeah, no.
Was the release date going to be 9/11 in Japan?
It was always the 14th. They had set 14th as the date. I remember in the weird days of saying September 11th and September 12th afterwards, I was like, I need to go on IGN and see any information that is not this. And that's when the launch happened. And I think Nintendo gave some statement of like, well, we wish America well, and hopefully this... It was some sort of nicety about it. I was too busy playing the September 10th released Advance Wars,
which I bought on September 11th. Boy, you know, 9/11 comes up on every GameCube podcast, but it's so attached to all of these console releases.
It's unfortunate.
Yes, but I mean, it is etched in our brains as people who live through it. But moving on from terrorist attacks. So without a doubt, this game is a tech showcase for the GameCube, and it shows off tons of innovations that all feed into the gameplay. And these all may sound innocent and things you would expect in a game system in game hardware, but in 2001, they were a big deal for Nintendo, and they wanted to build a game around showing all of these things off. So let's go through them one by one. Number one. Dual stick controls, a first for a Nintendo system. So N64 did not have another stick, and I think Miyamoto regretted that ultimately.
They're almost always in the console space. Nintendo is almost always at the cutting edge of controls. They are leading the way, and that they got scooped by the DualShock with twin stick controllers, I think that kind of messed with them. And that's also though why they went with the C stick to be like, well, this is our thing, and it's stupider with
it's
an octagon.
Smaller and worse. But yes, Nintendo had to assume you're in our garden, our walled garden. You've never used two sticks before. Here is a game designed around using two sticks at once, because we have to train you now to use two sticks. These are what all the games are going to use now. So that is the major gameplay of Luigi's Mansion. Second innovation, a lighting engine, actual light. Luigi always carries a flashlight, which creates real-time shadows. Again, games are going to have shadows if there's light. That did not happen on N64. Mario had a little black sticker that floated under him. That was a shadow. That was just something they programmed in so you know where he was jumping. It was not a shadow cast in real time. So some games have had very primitive lighting, but nothing on this scale, and it still looks impressive today. And I have to say, a lot of the 3DS effects are really toned down compared to the GameCube version. The GameCube version is still graphically superior in many ways.
Yeah, they turned up a lot of the effects that they'd kind of, I think, in a different game or that wasn't a launch game, they might have had as a little more understated. But like the, especially in the GameCube version, the ghosts are just like neon, just bright. They're showing off the transparency to the ghosts and how luminous they are too, to go with Luigi's light on everything.
And when the lightning strikes outside, it casts a shadow through the windows, and you know, Luigi casts shadow too, and sometimes you need to use, at least in one set piece, you need to look at the shadows to determine where the ghosts are in the room, invisible ghosts. So in that way, it's not just, you know, window dressing, it's using shadows to, you know, feed into the gameplay. Another thing, which is just, you know, this is just window dressing, particle effects, which is also really toned down in the 3DS version. Everything, there's dust everywhere. Everything's kicking up dust in this mansion.
Yeah, I was agog at the dust. I was like, I can't see this kind of dust on nothing. Yeah. The games have changed.
Finally, filth. And I think we've achieved the dustiest worlds on the PS4. There's just crap floating through the air everywhere. Bring a mask. But yes, again, you can't do this on an N64. There's no dust. You can't make dust on an N64. A big deal in 2001.
The games are naturally fuzzy, but that's not really dust particles.
Yes, wipe off your TV, but it won't help. Another thing which all game hardware designers were obsessed with in the turn of the century, and I'm glad we moved on, analog buttons. Mm-hmm. So the 3DS version says, who cares about that? It doesn't even matter. And it never did. But the further you push in the R trigger, the harder Luigi will suck. Just with his vacuum. And if you have an elemental power, if you click it in all the way, he'll shoot a projectile.
The idea of the analog buttons on the triggers are cool. And I get it, too, because I think one of the favorite things Nintendo loves showing off with the N64 analog stick was just showing like the precision of, say, they were like, here's Mario walking slowly and crawling, and now he's walking and now he's running. So wouldn't the next innovation to that be having that extend to other buttons and not just the control stick? So
yeah,
I understand the appeal of that. And with his sucking machine, when you have the vacuum cleaner in there, the level of intensity to it, that's a good first use for the levels. I mean, this first you have the sucking of this, and then a year later you have the blowing of the water cannon flood.
Luigi sprayed water first in his game.
That's true, yeah.
Made by the same person, Professor E. Gadd. Mm-hmm. I think the GameCube had one step above what the PS2 DualShock had, in that it was very easy to tell how far you were pulling in those triggers. Mm-hmm. And then when you pull them in all the way, you would have a click.
Yeah.
And the PS2 DualShock did not have that. And the games that asked you to use button sensitivity, it was just like, it was so hard to figure out. Like, is this in all the way now? But not very many games did that. I think Metal Gear was really the ones that were bothering me the most in that series.
Yeah, that satisfying click to the shoulder button always felt good.
So music and the sound effect system are a big deal, but we'll talk about that in its own section later because it's a huge thing in this game. Another thing that's a tech showcase, lots of crap on the screen, just like money.
Lots of crazy crap on the walls.
Lots of crazy crap on the walls. Money flies everywhere. Dollar bills for the first time in a Mario game, I'm sure.
Yes, never before. We're not counting off. Never will I mention Mario is missing any other time in this, but all those real world money things that were in bad Mario games that were not made by actual Nintendo team people, maybe there was cash in those.
That's not canon.
Yeah.
I refuse to accept that. But yes, things are flying everywhere. There's so many things on the screen, and it still performs very well.
Yeah, it's just showing off all the shit it can do at once. Like, it's really, when you compare that to even a late N64 game that had the RAM expansion on it, like Conker couldn't do this shit. No way.
Yeah, and it still looked kind of bad. Even I love Majora's Mask, but it still is an ugly game.
Yes.
So graphics in general, it's kind of a cheat, but I think this game still looks really good today because they were smart enough to focus on small environments and making them very detailed. And also in those environments, you had just a few very expressive characters. So a lot of games of this time were too ambitious. So you had especially things like even Grand Theft Auto 3, you were in a city, but it was all very flat and ugly. I will go as far to say few 3D games looked as good as this game did in 2001. The ones I can think of maybe that would top Luigi's Mansion at this time are Metal Gear Solid 2.
Oh, yeah.
And that's probably about it.
Maybe Final Fantasy X.
But then they use pre-rendered stuff a lot of the time. So.
Well, that's the coward's way out.
It really is.
No, I mean, Kojima had more time to work on his console of choice with Metal Gear 2, and it was meant to be the most expensive thing ever and look gorgeous, and it also had a much bigger scope. That's something that was really clever by Nintendo with the concept of Luigi's Mansion, which is it's... You're not thinking, why aren't I in a big world? When you're playing it, you're not thinking, why aren't I in this big world? Why aren't I seeing all of these things? You're just like, well, I'm in this mansion. Rooms are this size. I'm not feeling like I'm being denied more stuff. Oh, and also on the graphic, on the super detailed environments, one really show-offy thing that struck me was the mirrors. Like, they're yes, like, look yes. at these mirrors. Can't do that. This is a reflective surface showing what's at this angle. Replaying the 3DS one was when my memory really came back of being impressed by mirrors when it's like, well, how do I get out of this place? Where's the, and then I noticed, oh, there's a mirror right there reflecting a button that's on the invisible wall towards the camera. That I remember when I saw that on a GameCube, I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool. I've never seen that before.
And you could take a picture of any mirror to transport yourself back to the lobby. Oh, it's an easy warp, yeah.
Wow. Yep. I completely forgot that.
I found out on accident when I didn't want to do that. Yeah, so there's a new level of fidelity with this hardware. So now you can make complex rooms filled with small objects that Luigi can shake for money and things like that. So we didn't have this level of fidelity on a Nintendo system at the time. So they really took advantage of it by making these small environments that are just full of like tiny things and like little details.
And playing this game too transported me back to 01, and it reminded me of a feeling I really haven't had with a Nintendo game since, which is the launch of a Nintendo system having cutting edge graphics.
Like, yes.
This is not to say I love some launch games on the Wii. I loved one launch game on the Wii U and the Switch, Breath of the Wild. What gets better than that? However, I have never been like, wow, this is the best graphics I've ever seen, and I'm seeing it in a Nintendo game. This was the last time I felt this on a launch day for a Nintendo system.
No, you're totally right about that. And if you look at the other launch games for the other systems, nothing really looked this good at the time.
I think at the time, like Halo, I played way more Halo Combat Evolved than I did Luigi's Mansion, but it didn't look better than this. Like some skyboxes look good, but that's just a fucking JPEG. That's not.
It was a big clunky world, and I mean, it was impressive in terms of scope at the time, but it has not aged very well. You know,
yeah,
it's still a really good game. Don't get me wrong, Halo is really good, but I think in terms of,
why do you hate Halo?
Oh, I dislike that Master Chef guy. He never cooks me anything anymore. But yeah, I mean, in terms of scope, it was a much bigger game, but I feel like it didn't age as well because it was more ambitious than Luigi's Mansion. It was like, let's make a whole world.
Yeah, I wonder, too, if this is the lackluster reaction to this game in particular, Luigi's Mansion. I wonder if that was one of the first things that turned Nintendo off to, like, why are we being cutting edge? Why should we do that? What advantage did we have by being cutting edge graphically with Luigi's Mansion? People didn't like it.
Yeah, their tiny box didn't convince gamers in that era, you know, that, ooh, it's the wave of the future instead of, you know, the sexy PS2 or the gigantic Xbox. Let's talk about some of the inspiration that Luigi's Mansion draws from. So, obviously, it is a takeoff on Ghostbusters. And way back in the day, almost a decade ago, for Christ's sake, I did a 1UP Retronauts blog series about Ghostbusters games. And this was the final entry because this is the best Ghostbusters game.
Still is.
It still is.
There was an 09 Ghostbusters game that tried. This game is better than that.
Oh, I think that's why I wrote that series, because of that new game. Okay. But yeah, that game is fine. It's like a C+, and the voices are there. And it's fun to play through once, but this is the best Ghostbusters game because it's made by Nintendo, and thankfully nobody sued.
Harold Ramis's Ghostbusters weren't the first Ghostbusters either.
And now he's a ghost that can be busted, so they don't want to sue anybody. So yes, obviously Ghostbusters with the proton pack and everything. You can see the connection there. And one of the ghosts is very Slimer-like. It's a green ghost that eats bananas and drops the peel. So they knew what they were doing.
And the ghost containment unit just is the one from the show, for the animated series and the movie.
It's true. One very obvious thing that I just picked up on now is, this is the Disney's Haunted Mansion ride. I've been on it 3 times, and I had been on it before I played this game, but only now, when I was capturing the dancing couple, I was like, oh, of course. Yes. all the paintings and this, and I'm going to go back to Disney soon. I want to see how many other things they stole, because Haunted Mansion exists in Tokyo Disneyland. I looked it up.
Mm-hmm.
There is a version of Haunted Mansion. I'm sure it's the same as the one they built in the 60s or whatever at Disneyland.
Yeah, you know that. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, people who've been to Tokyo Disney, but I've only been to Disney Sea, not Tokyo Disney. But part of that is because they just have so many copied rides there that I'm like, well, I can go to these at Disneyland. I want to see. I only have one day here. I'm going to go to the new stuff that's at Disney Sea. So, I would think Disney in general and Disney Anna, that kind of family-friendly but scary vibe they're going for, that in general is what Nintendo kind of strives for. They like going for that stuff. So this Haunted Mansion tonally really fits with what they're going for. And then on top of that, Haunted Mansion really is a series of boxes that they're showing off, like, well, this is this spooky room. What's the trick to it?
That's true.
That's presentationally very similar to Luigi's Mansion.
I can't wait to go back and check it out. But it's of that very old-timey style of haunted house where all the ghosts are from the 19th century. There's no new ghosts. They're all ghosts who died before electricity. It's just so charming. And obviously, it's because
they all died of cholera.
They all died of, just drinking the water, basically. But yeah, I love that charming, post-war idea of the haunted house where it's like, oh yeah, these are all Victorian ghosts or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's all happening in Luigi's Mansion. And there's a very bizarre story that I'm glad is just glossed over in this game. It's like, it's held up by a very flimsy story in which,
oh yeah,
I guess Mario and Luigi think they win a mansion, and Mario goes first to check it out, and it's discovered that that's a mansion that just appeared just a few weeks ago, and Mario goes missing and Luigi has to find him. But then you realize, okay, so the boos are the ghosts in this world. They created the mansion, but they also created different ghosts
that are
live
not
in the mansion that aren't boos, but they're also not people who died and became ghosts. But
so you're not catching a dead baby.
No, you're not catching a dead baby. I think they did that to take the morbidity out of the idea. It's like, these are all dead people. What happened to them in this house? But if you look at the lore behind the characters in their bios, the character ghosts that you catch, It implies with some of them they were alive at some point. And also, one of the character ghosts you catch in the game creates the ghosts in the mansion, the minor ghosts in the mansion. So boos are creating ghosts that then create ghosts. And the ghosts that create ghosts could have been alive at some point. I really need answers.
But they also made the mansion, too. Like, the mansion didn't even exist. They built it on top of Egad's lab.
Yes.
And
it's King Boo who's behind it all, which I think this is the first game with King Boo in it.
I believe so,
yeah. There was never a King of the Boos until now, but
and that was another thing. This is spoiler, guys, but it's a game that ends with Bowser, and then they're like, nah, it's not really Bowser. You didn't get Bowser in this game. Mario's not in this game, and Bowser's not even in this game. We fucked you.
It was to get you excited for Mario Sunshine and that bad final boss fight with Bowser that I don't like very much.
No.
But yeah, the story makes no sense, and I love just how goofy and silly it is, and I think I just started playing Dark Moon, the sequel, and the story makes a lot more sense where it's like, oh yeah, the moon exploded. Find the moon pieces.
Yeah. Well, because I do think Next Level, the Canadian developer of it, maybe came with a little more story focus of like, well, let's integrate the story just a little bit better this time. The story is pointless. You got to get Luigi in a scary mansion. That's the be all end all.
Yeah. And eventually you have like 10 seconds of Mario at the end as your war. It's like, wow, see, technically it is a Mario game. All my friends were wrong. So we might take this for granted, but it is also a Resident Evil parody developed at the tail end of Resident Evil's first rise and before the pre-RE4 slump. So put into development probably like 99-ish, I'm guessing, maybe early 2000, when, you know, that was the wake of RE2 and RE3 before Code Veronica sort of made things slump a little more. And they were really taking advantage of that sort of phenomenon, I think. And it's weird to see Nintendo make not only a horror game, but a parody of a game as well.
Yeah, an all-ages Resident Evil game. I wonder what, if anything, this had to do with Nintendo not too long after this release making the deal for Resident Evil games on the GameCube. But it only hit me. I knew it then, but I kind of forgotten. And then it hit me when I was replaying this, like, oh, this foyer is really the start to Resident Evil. And then the first time they did a door opening load screen, I was like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
right
down to the door opening animations, yeah. You get Resident Evil. It's so cool. And I think it's something that we sort of take for granted and don't really talk about. But yes, it is a Resident Evil parody. And I think further games, like the sequel, doesn't lean into that as much because there are different... It's like a series of mansions, right?
Yeah, well, so that's the... That is the big difference between these two games, is that Luigi's Mansion originally, they're like, this is the mansion. We call it Luigi's Mansion. And that means you don't get a lot of variety, but you do get a giant mansion experience. But in Dark of the Moon, I think partially to extend it, you get to definitely make it a longer game. Like Dark of the Moon lasts closer to like 10 hours. But that's because you go to more than one mansion. Like
at least five.
Yeah. And so because of that, you get a lot more variety, but they're also not as big.
So how the game plays, it's basically sort of like a Zelda dungeon, just a prolonged Zelda dungeon.
That's a really good way to put it,
It's the most Zelda-like Mario game in existence. And most of the game involves going into rooms, clearing them of ghosts to light them up. And then once you do that, you get keys that will unlock other rooms. Often there will be quote-unquote character ghosts in the rooms that will require you to do something in order to reveal their weak points. And if you go into first-person mode using your Game Boy Horror, you can scan their hearts and get a hint as to what you need to do. Usually it's pretty obvious. It's like, I need to spray this ghost with water. I need to pull the curtain back on the showering ghost. Things like that. It's all about playing with the environment to reveal the ghost's weak points.
Yeah, I like that. I like that silliness to it. And if you want to scan it with the Game Boy Horror, then they're just like, you couldn't look at me when I'm reading this book. Oh, yes. I'm sleepy.
And the Game Boy Horror is cool, too, because
I love it.
You can look at... There's not enough flavor text in the game, and they reuse a lot of it, but I like getting Luigi's inner life expressed through these thoughts about things in the room. He's like, you call that art? Like, stuff like that. And talking about... You look at a birdhouse, he's like, oh, I could raise carrier pigeons in this. That'd be fun. Just like little cute things about Luigi you don't get in other games.
Yeah, another one of my faves was when he's like, well, I guess the booze could even build all this old furniture in here, not just the outside.
And when you take a picture of the toilet, they're like, wow, this is a very realistic mansion. So Luigi has a lot of commentary about this mansion. And the character ghosts actually remind me a lot of the Wind Waker in that there is a large cast of very distinct characters, each with their own personalities.
Yeah.
And you're also like sort of in a living cartoon as well. So I was really getting Wind Waker-y vibes from this upon replaying it again.
Yeah, you know, when we were talking... influences, there was one I meant to mention. Aardman and Wallace and Gromit, like there's no source for this, but if you just look at especially that first tech demo, Luigi's acting, his movements, and especially his mouth looks so much like an Aardman, Wallace and Gromit style claymation figure.
Yeah, Luigi is a little bit quote-unquote off model in this game compared to his normal Mario appearances. Mm-hmm. If you look at the size of his hands, his hands are like the size of his torso. He is very much an Aardman character in this game.
But man, and those fingers, they're showing off.
They really are. You can see every finger.
Mario just had boxes for hands in every previous game.
But I don't know if you mentioned it in your Aardman talk, but he even like kind of shuffles around like Wallace
does
in the game.
Yeah, it's I think he is a cousin of Wallace in this, I think. Sometimes his mouth gets even kind of oblong in that way. And I would definitely think that Miyamoto and the rest of the crew at Nintendo were aware of Wallace and Gromit and could take inspiration from that. That's also kid-friendly scares something Wallace and Gromit offers up.
So the game is basically broken, even though it's one contiguous mansion, it's broken into four stages. And after you explore a certain amount of the mansion, you will fight a boss character. The bosses are not in this game. They're not very good. I don't like the bosses that much.
No. Well, one thing that kind of hurts the pacing of this, I think, is the bosses are just such a simple little trick to them. And then once you get past that trick, then it's you're catching them basically the same way you capture all of them, which is just a fishing mini game, which we've done Spider-Man now, so my next pitch is fishing video games.
Oh, that'd be great.
I love fishing in games, and I have loved some specifically fishing games like Sega Bass Fishing and Sega Deep Sea Fishing on the Dreamcast. But anywho, this is also a fishing game. It is a fishing mini game once you catch them, and just
Japan loves fishing games.
The sound of the real like
As you take down their HP. We should point that out too. The controls, they feel really good too. Mm-hmm. I have to say, they feel better on the GameCube. I think I gave myself some sort of injury when I was fighting Bowser in the 3DS version.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, man, the 3DS is not ergonomic at all.
Also, no rumble.
Yeah, no rumble either. And now let's talk about the music and the sound effects. They're so good.
Mm.
It won a BAFTA. I played through this entire game with giant like noise-canceling headphones on through my 3DS. It made me remember how good the music in this game is and how few games pay this close attention to sound. Number one, because most people aren't going to notice. The game Monkey Island 2 uses this very advanced sound system that, you know, organically transitions between songs on the fly, can add instruments on the fly, things like that. It was very advanced for 1991, and none of the other games sounded like that. And I asked the creator, Ron Gilbert, why did you not do that in other games? And he was like, people didn't notice. So I think that's what's happening here. I don't really recall Nintendo being this clever or advanced with a soundscape since this game at all.
Maybe they felt like if not enough people notice, why do we bother with this? You know?
Yeah, and I think when I was reading reviews of this game for research, and most of the reviews are like, one song in this game, it's so repetitive. Just like, you weren't even paying attention. So there is one very simple, very catchy song in this game, and it's in my head forever. It's even deeper in my head after replaying it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's constant throughout everything you're doing in the game, but who or what is performing it will change based on the situation you're in. So when Luigi is whistling the theme, that means you're in a clear area with no ghosts, and then you're fine, nothing to worry about. When the ghosts are making the theme with their chattering, it's very atonal, it's very like dissonant. That means there are ghosts in the room, you have not found them yet. When Luigi is nervously humming, that means you're in an area that is not completely safe. And when there's traditional instruments playing, that means you're exploring a hallway or a connecting area between rooms that presumably cannot be cleared of ghosts. So all of these instrumentations, all these performances have a meaning in the game that you sort of internalize, but the game will switch between them on the fly. It's very organic. There's no break. There's no abrupt stop to one version of the song when another one starts. And what's great about this is that when you're catching the ghosts and reeling them in, the music is super chaotic. It sounds like a tape being rewound and fast-forwarded,
yeah.
And that really clashes with the consistent sound you hear throughout the game, the consistent tune. I really like how you hear this consistent song throughout the game, and then when you catch ghosts, it's just pure chaos. And I have to assume the sound that you hear when you catch the ghost, the quote-unquote music you hear, is that theme being sped up and fast-forwarded and just being played with a lot.
I think so, yeah. And it makes the catching of the ghost feel even more intense than just the visual of it just hearing like...
Yeah. It really punctuates the action. It really punctuates the experience.
That kind of music then, on top of it, has the little clinkety sounds of moving down the health levels on the ghost. They work in tandem to really make it exciting.
And on top of that, the tempo of the music will change, and the way Luigi performs the music will change based on his health. It's a very easy game, so you have to kind of hurt yourself on purpose to hear the different versions of the song.
Yes.
But it is cool, and again, so much attention to detail. And here's the thing. I think Nintendo misread the room as to what gamers wanted in a way that it makes this game great because we can appreciate it more now because we had different expectations and games were moving in a different way back then. But what they gave us with this game is an interactive cartoon, and they were always sort of edging towards that with the way sound and action work together in past games. But with this game, it's just like everything is tied to Luigi's motion. Everything is tied to what's happening on the screen. There's not just like, okay, play stage one on MP3 and have fun in this level. It's just, it's all like all the sound is tied to movement in a very specific way that would not be the future of games, even for Nintendo, which I find very, very interesting.
Yeah. It was something, you know, they'd kind of been, like you said, they've been edging to it before. Yoshi's Island definitely wanted to feel like a living cartoon, even more so than Super Mario World did. And 64 wanted to just expand that into a third dimension, but kind of gave up a bit of the personality that you have artistically. Now they could finally get back that personality in a third dimension kind of way through just the fidelity of the art that they're allowed to have.
Yeah, and I think Nintendo would have moved more in this direction if this game had been more of a critical success. I mean, it is a very good-selling game. It is the fourth best-selling game on the GameCube.
Mainly
because it was a launch game, but
sure,
people
but
did not have a good impression of this game after a few weeks. So
yeah.
But I feel like they would have worked more in this direction. They would have moved more in this direction. But now when you play Mario Odyssey, it's very much like, okay, play Winter Stage on MP3 and run around in this level.
Well,
there's more care to it than that. There's more thought behind it than that. But it's not this level of like, let's have this different soundscape depending on what's happening at all times.
Totally. No, and the cartoon, the living cartoon kind of thing, to went to its peak in Wind Waker.
Oh, yeah.
And Nintendo definitely, I think, felt they were punished for that by fans.
We don't want this.
I want Lord of the Rings.
In Wind Waker, especially in the battles, the music was sort of like procedurally generated based on your actions and the movements of Link and the movements of the enemies. But yeah,
that's awesome.
It did feel good, but it's sort of like an evolutionary dead end that I really wish they would pursue again. But again, people aren't noticing these things. People weren't walking away from Wind Waker going, well, the music in this game is very innovative in this way. Or they, again, you walk away from Luigi's Mansion, you see these reviews, and the review is like, only one song? What the hell is this crap? So yes, they didn't care enough.
That's why they're kids, because they're stupid. I also loved hearing the moments of Luigi singing along to his own song when he's scared, like,
it's kind of reassuring, I assume, for younger players too, because they're like, see, Luigi is scared too. Luigi's on your side.
Well, you want to talk about Charles Martinet's performance in this?
Yes.
Which is really good.
Because one thing we didn't hit upon is this game forever characterized Luigi within the games. He would have different characterizations in the animated shows, but this sort of defined Luigi in his personality from this point forward.
For sure. This is what made Luigi the Luigi we know. If I could give it like a... As far as Nintendo is concerned, the internal biography of Luigi, he just was another guy with Mario. But only the American version of Super Mario 2 even made him look different, which they didn't canonize until Super Mario Kart. But even then, he's just a guy who sounds a little different from Mario. And he will play table. He'd play doubles tennis with Daisy, but that was kind of it. Like, he was just the other Mario. But this is when they finally like, no, he's more scared than Mario. That's his thing. And they really, when this got shown off in 2000, that's when it was already getting popular, and so they were starting to integrate it into stuff. There's actually, in early 2001, Paper Mario comes out on the N64, the last Mario game on the system. I'm pretty sure it was. Unless there was some bullshit Mario Party, but who cares?
Probably was.
But in that game, there's a great moment where you can go back home, and Luigi's just hanging out in the brother's home.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't want to go on adventures, no. And you can find his diary, and he comes off as a real scaredy cat in that diary, even saying a line of just like, man, I heard Mario met a bunch of ghosts somewhere. That'd be too scary for me. I wouldn't want that.
So maybe internally they were deciding around this time, like, this is who Luigi should be. Mario has to be the everyman, the blank slate you project yourself upon, but Luigi can be the Shaggy in the Scooby-Doo universe, the one character with a personality, and I love that.
Freddy is not as interesting as Shaggy. Like, you want to hang out with Shaggy, not Freddy, and Mario is Freddy in that equation.
It really is. And Daphne, okay, wait, so Daphne would be Princess Peach. Mm-hmm. Velma.
Daisy's Velma.
Okay. And Scooby-Doo is Yoshi.
Yeah.
We did it. Right, yes. But yeah, this game, if for anything, even if you don't like it, this game cemented Luigi as the fun coward that he would eventually go on to, you know, live as for the rest of time.
And that lets him be much more interesting, and Charles Martinet plays that very well, and just like the many different ways he says, Mario! Mario!
There is a button you can hit that just Mario. Yells Mario.
Yeah.
There's one time he goes, Mario! Like, really loud. And I'm sorry for doing that. I hate doing Mario and Luigi impressions.
And just all his screaming. Just like, wah! It's actually in Dark of the Moon, the last scene with Mario and Luigi in it, where he frees Mario and Mario thanks him. They barely speak. But when Mario thanks him for saving him, Luigi is like, he saved the day.
That's heartwarming. At the end of Luigi's Mansion 1, he just laughs at Mario for getting shot out of the ghost machine and looking stupid.
I give it to Next Level. They found they found an emotional core to the story of Luigi being scared but triumphing over his fear.
As I said before, this is a very short game. If you take your time, if you shake every object, if you find all the 50 hidden boos in the mansion, you will clock in at under 5 hours.
Yeah, you know, that's something that really hit me again in playing this. I was like, they kind of, I don't want to say it's too far, but they used a lot of padding in this that's a lot more obvious to me now. Just like,
yeah.
Like, how many times Egad says, ooh, you know what? Stop what you're doing. Come back to the lab. Well, why? So I have to go back to the start of the world and then walk all the way back here just to pad like, out more time?
Every time you catch a boo, he's got to tell you something new and save your game and everything. There's a lot of that stuff in it. And by hour three, you feel them getting all sweaty like, oh, boy, we got to get something else going on in this game. Hey, oh, the power went out. Go down to the basement. And now five ghosts will attack you in every room. It's the worst part of this game.
Yeah.
And I wish it's like, boy, this game could be a better game if it was 2 hours even or three hours.
But you can't. I mean, it was... They knew you can't sell a disc game at $50 then that's 2 hours long. Like, that's just, it would be seen as wrong.
And this is a really good port, I'll have to say that. It was really fun to replay. My main issue with it is it's $40. And this is not a $40 experience. And I realize porting a game is a lot of work, often more work than making a new game. And it's not just dragging the EXE to a new folder.
How hard could it be?
At $19.99, perfect. It'd be a perfect experience. $40, I don't think so. And they don't add a lot of new content. And the new content they add is sort of pointless. So we mentioned the vile criminal Guiji at the beginning of this podcast. There is a multiplayer feature, but there's no new content. You can just have a friend dip in with
gooing it up
with a green Guiji. And it's just like, it's not, I mean, I guess it could be fun, but it's also a very easy game to begin with. And having a second player in there would just, it would just be too much.
Well, and the rooms aren't bigger. So like having a goo partner walking around with you, it only takes up more space in what are meant to be claustrophobic rooms where you want to touch everything. And I'd also wouldn't want my goo brother hanging around touching the stuff. And I'm like, no, I wanted to shake that lamp and see if something fell out of it.
Check out our What a Cartoon About G.I. Joe for more about goo people and goo wives. But yeah, so when you beat the game, you unlock Luigi's Hidden Mansion. And what that is the same mansion, but things are harder. And
game plus, I guess, kind of the old. Well, not even that.
In the loosest sense, the game is harder. You also can earn more money in the game, but you don't get anything with the money. You can earn a higher rank at the end with the money. What does that rank get you? Nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I got a rank of B, and I found all the treasures. It's like, well, do you want A? It's like, well, what does A get me? Nothing.
It was cool to see real world money kind of put into the game and like how good the gold bars look, per se. But at the end of the day, it's just a point on your screen. Like it's like in Donkey Kong, like here's your point total. But post arcade, point totals in games that don't arrive at anything or unlock anything, it doesn't. I feel nothing for those.
I think in the plan for this game, they wanted to have like an upgrade system for the Poltergust 3000, which is the vacuum cleaner Luigi uses, but there just wasn't time. And also there was not that expectation of games at this time for there to be like a skill tree or upgrades or things like that. I mean, you could have a character be the same from start to finish in a game and it would be fine. And that's what this game is. But yeah, the point system is kind of pointless. It is fun to pick up big diamonds and gold bars and to suck up money, but ultimately it's for nothing. And all you do is earn like a letter at the end that doesn't mean anything at all to anybody. But yeah, if you've got $40 and you want to replay the game, there's really no other way to do it unless you've got the GameCube disc and a Wii or a GameCube, and those aren't hard to find. I assume you might be able to get both for less than $40 at this point.
Maybe
you never know.
At a swap meet, perhaps. I mean, like you said, it was the fourth highest selling one when it was in player's choice. It was a good player's choice game. I'm like, you're $20.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. It was definitely worth $20. But so I just started Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, and it seems really cool. I'm excited to play through more of it, especially I'm going to Portland soon. It's going to be a fun travel game for me in the spooky season. And I already noticed like super, super great things they upgraded. Like Luigi can run now. And things are just a little bit faster.
When I couldn't run in this game, I was like, wait, was that always how it was? This sucks.
You can walk slower. you can walk or walk slower.
Well, again, but if you can run, the game's over even faster.
That's true.
So they gotta contain that.
What if Luigi had a limp? But you
Luigi
played it, Henry.
Steps in a bear trap at the start of the game.
Oh my god. So you played this game, Henry. I'm excited about playing it. It's from 2013. It's not retro enough to really talk about, but who cares? We're talking about Luigi's Mansion. What are your thoughts on Dark Moon before we go? Because I'm super excited to play through it after playing through the first game again.
I reviewed Dark Moon when it was new in the year of our Luigi.
It was the year of Luigi.
It was the year of Luigi.
Oh my god!
That's why you'll find funny videos of from the Year of Luigi of Miyamoto and Iwata sucking up stuff in Nintendo Directs. Like, that was also the worst year for Nintendo financially, 2013.
Oh, boy.
It was a very dark time for them. And also, Iwata got sick. It was a bad year, 2013 was, but at least we got this game. But so, it was announced as Luigi's Mansion 2. For some reason, Nintendo of America hates having numbers on sequels, so it's Luigi's Mansion 2 everywhere but here.
Really?
It's
okay.
Dark Moon here, which is also why when the Luigi's Mansion 3 got revealed on the Nintendo of America trailer, it's got the old Nintendo of America asterisk, title not final. And I have a very good feeling it will not be called Luigi's Mansion 3 in America since it wasn't 2 here.
Yeah, they're not going to go from subtitle to 3.
But Luigi Dark Moon, I really liked quite a lot. It finally felt like Luigi's Mansion made sense. I had enjoyed the first Luigi's Mansion, but it also felt like something Nintendo was ashamed of. So when they made a new one, I was like, whoa, this is great. And I believe it came about because Next Level Games, who they are so much better than you might think they are if you looked at their list of tie-in movie license trash they do.
I can't believe they went from that to We Punch Out, the Dark Moon. What else have they made?
They actually did the best Marvel games that Sega put out of the Marvel films. They did the best Thor game. They did the best Captain America game. On terrible budgets and low expectations from Sega, they did that. But their best work was with Nintendo. And on Dark Moon, I believe it came about because they made a tech demo of one of the first areas of Luigi's Mansion just to show Nintendo what they could do. And it sounded like one of those classic Miyamoto stories of just like, hey, just do that. You can do that. Do it. And so what they did was they found a longer story to tell, more places to go, and expanded it all out in a good way that also put a lot more heart into it and turned it into what could be a franchise. Luigi's Mansion, the first one, once you're done with it, you're like, I don't particularly feel like playing another one of these again too soon. But Dark in the Moon shows you what a bigger, ghostier world that Luigi could involve himself in. And it even gives him a cute pet, who...
That's right, a dead dog.
Who will be... He's featured in the trailer for Luigi's Mansion 3. And yeah, it's got more fun acting in it. Cool bosses, better bosses than you get in Luigi's Mansion.
It feels like it's more of a puzzle game, trying to figure out how to do things in the rooms.
Yeah, they found way more cool puzzles to do and just showing off things. And some neat... Each one is like kind of a diorama. Each one is kind of a diorama.
Diorama, I love it.
That you get to play around in. I really enjoyed it. I felt like not enough people gave it a chance when it first came out. Maybe the re-release of this will get... The re-release of the first one will get people to play Dark Moon again, and especially with the... I'm curious to see how much excitement there will be for the Switch third one, but I think there should be, and I'm glad they're doing it. To my research, I could not tell if Next Level is making it. You know?
They are. I just looked it up. They are making it, yes. Because, according to Wikipedia, that could be wrong.
Because the only thing I had to go on was the trailer for 3, and you know, usually if they're working with a second party, they'll be in the copyright at the bottom, but it's only Nintendo's copyright at the bottom. But hey, who am I to disagree with Wikipedia?
Someone could have gotten out there, jumped to conclusions, Matt, for this one. But yes, one thing I noticed about the sequel is that there is no Game Boy horror. That's the one downgrade for me. What I liked about this game, we didn't really mention it, is that you can go... It was another thing that was a big deal at this time, like going into first person to look around at stuff. Mm-hmm. And the big surprise is the wall you don't see that the camera is looking through. It's there. When you go into first person, it's there.
Sometimes there's
stuff there you can look at. There's sometimes secrets and things like that. That's another cool thing about this game. But yes, Next Level should be making this game. Unfortunately, the last game they made, and this is not their fault, is Metroid Prime Federation Force. I assume it's a very good game. They make very good games, but people did not want a co-op 3DS shooter in 2016.
They did the best they could with it, but they were fucked from the moment one. When you called it... When there had been no Metroid games of any kind, and you call this a Metroid game, people will only feel insulted. It's the same way of just like when you put out a Castlevania game that just... It is this executive thinking of like, well, we have this license or this... We have this franchise we haven't used in a while. Let's just put the title on it and it'll sell it. It's at least with gamers who are, have very specific needs, you can't do a side game without doing a regular game more recently.
It's true, but I think Metroid is going to be okay after Samus returns, which is all right.
That was definitely all right, and it helps.
I need to finish.
Though, you know, I'm curious. I'm really curious to see what Prime 4 is. The rumors going around that Namco's making it, and it's like Namco Shanghai, which, so their problem, this is such a side thing.
It's fine.
Their problem with Prime 4 is that even if they gave it to Retro Studios, the people who made Prime left Retro Studios a while ago. So it's not, it wouldn't even be the Prime people making it.
And they made that game no one cares about.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, ReCore. Yep. ReCore, yep.
Is it ReCore? I thought that was the Inafune game.
Well, it was both those things.
Okay, it could be two things.
Well, it could be two things. Armature is the developer, yes. And Armature is the developer of ReCore. Concept and Armature, they did it together. Okay.
So yes, it was Inafune's Concept and Armature, which is the people who left Retro. Boy, I'm still waiting for that Red Legend, whatever, Mega Man Legends thing.
That's going to be so good.
And the anime. When's that showing up, Inafune? But yeah. So Luigi's Mansion 3 is coming out in 2019, presumably, but I think you're right, Henry. It's going to be like spring 2020.
That's my bad.
What do you want from it? Frankly, like, just make the prettiest version of this experience. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be multiplayer. It doesn't need to be like a new innovative thing. Just the biggest, best, prettiest version of this single player experience, and I'd be happy with it.
Yeah, what I want from it is definitely, you know, be a graphical showcase, at least, like, you know, the limited room and the boxed in nature of it allows for you being able to put all your stuff under the spotlight. When you have to build an entire huge game world like Mario Odyssey, you know, that kind of spreads out resources, even though I think Mario Odyssey looks really good.
It's gorgeous, yeah.
But if you put it all, what if you put all of those graphics into one box? Mm-hmm. And then how good could that look? And I hope, too, that they keep the spirit of humor, like in that kind of Wallace and Gromit contraptions, the spirit of contraptions and silliness and goofery and comedy. They really need to keep the spirit of comedy to that, and I hope they do. Like, it's easier said than done. Comedy in games is one of the hardest things to pull off, because you don't even have control over the timing like you would in anything else. It's the player who does. But
I think it really works here, and they're allowed to have more fun in this than they are in core Mario games.
Yes, yeah. Which, as we talk about in the Wario games too, it's just like, Mario, you just can't have fun.
Yeah.
Now you're finally free. I was thinking about Luigi's Mansion playing the Rabbids game, the Mario Rabbids game, which is really good. It should be very bad, but it's very good. And in that, Mario doesn't get to act. He's just like, he's either surprised or resolute.
Mario will not speak in this game.
But when Luigi shows up, he starts getting to do silly stuff with the Rabbids in the background. They're having fun with him.
And the Luigi Rabbit is much goofier and sillier than the Mario one, too. So yes, that's also a fun game. Like Luigi's Mansion is Resident Evil for kids, that is XCOM for kids.
Yep.
But it's also extremely hard.
Murder and death for kids in the Mario pack.
That's all I want from a game. But yes, thanks for listening, folks. This has been Retronauts, and we appreciate you listening to this show. And if you want to support the show, please go to patreon.com/retronauts and join us and be a member of the Retronauts Patreon. This entire show is funded via Patreon. And if you subscribe at just $3 a month, you can get every episode of this show a week at a time and ad-free. If you don't want to hear ads and you want a higher quality version of Retronauts, it's the ideal way to listen. You can spoil everything for everybody. You can tell everyone what my newest bad opinion is that you hate way ahead of the game. So yes, please go to patreon.com/retronauts to check it out and see what we can offer you. At higher tiers, we have more rewards, physical rewards, t-shirts, zines, stuff like that. And if you can't subscribe right now, please consider giving us a nice review on the iTunes Music Store. It helps the visibility of this show. For some reason, that is still the standard for podcast rankings. I don't understand it, but it still works, and I love reading new reviews. So check it out and subscribe to the show if you haven't. It's really easy to do. But yes, Henry, where can we find you and what do you work on? And I'm part of all of this.
This is a co-plug here.
I know. I'm letting you do it, though.
Hey, everybody. If you like hearing me and Bob gassing on about things we remember from our childhood in high detail, then you should be listening to our two podcasts we also do, Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon, both supported on the Talking Simpsons Network at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. Me and Bob go chronologically through every episode of The Simpsons from the start. We are deep into season 8 at the time of this recording. And in What a Cartoon, we go moment by moment in a different episode of a different cartoon each week. Retronauts listeners, if you haven't yet, definitely I would suggest you check out the ones we did with Retronauts co-host Jeremy Parrish, G.I. Joe, and soon, The Max.
It's coming soon.
And you get access to both of those podcasts a week ahead of time and ad-free if you sign up for $5 a month at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons for a ton of other exclusives, too.
And hey, if you're in the mood for Halloween stuff, this episode is dropping before Halloween for patrons. You see the privileges you get. It'll be dropping after Halloween for non-patrons. But if you want to check out our past Halloween episodes, I believe last year we did something about Monster Party.
I remember that.
And in 2013, I did a Jaws Friday the 13th episode. So I love doing holiday episodes. So check out the archives at retronauts.com or look in your MP3 device for past Halloween episodes. As for me, you can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I'm Bob Mackey, by the way. And yes, we will see you later on another brand new episode of Retronauts. Goodbye.
Life is full of those, moments.
Like right after that first stretch and yawn in the morning.
Yeah.
Or like standing in the forest alone amid the stillness. The beauty hits you like the crisp air and suddenly everything makes sense and you're one with the earth and stars. Or like dollar drinks at McDonald's.
Keep those moments going with $1 any size McCafe brewed coffee and $1 any size soft drinks on the $1, $2, $3 menu. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with combo meal.
The Mueller Report. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. President Trump was asked at the White House if Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation report should be released next week when he will be out of town.
I guess from what I understand, that will be totally up to the Attorney General.
Maine's Susan Collins says she would vote for a congressional resolution disapproving of President Trump's emergency declaration to build a border wall, becoming the first Republican senator to publicly back it. In New York, the wounded supervisor of a police detective killed by friendly fire was among the mourners attending his funeral. Detective Brian Simonson was killed as officers started shooting at a robbery suspect last week. Commissioner James O'Neill was among the speakers today at Simonson's funeral.
It's a tremendous weight to bear, knowing that your choices will directly affect the lives of others. But cops like Brian don't shy away from it. It's the very foundation of who they are and what they do.
The robbery suspect and a man police say acted as his lookout have been charged with murder. I'm Ed Donahue.